I hope you're ready for some good clean soot with episode number 28 of the Retro Rewind Podcast.
Wow, that's obscure.
Retro Rewind Podcast initialized. Mission identified. Mary Poppins, 1964. Co-hosts online. Auditory analysis online. All systems nominal.
Welcome to the Retro Rewind Podcast, where we look at movies and video games from 15 or more years ago and let you know whether they're still worth revisiting today. My name is Francisco Ruiz. I am a dad, a designer, and a defunct dancer. And I predicted that Mary Poppins would be a second-class movie. I am joined, as always, by my good friend and co-host, Paul Powers. Hi, Paul.
Paul's not here today.
Oh, and then
I'm sorry. hi, everyone. I am here.
Glad you're here. I have two questions for you, Paul. First,
I don't know what that was, so that's the answer to the first question.
If Mary Poppins was remade today, who do you think, like as a movie? I know it's a Broadway show, but remade today as another movie. Who do you think would do a better job in the title role, Nicole Kidman or Amy Adams?
Amy Adams.
Amy Adams. Okay.
She has the ability to play just about anything. Did you see her in the latest American Hustle?
No. Okay. But that's beside the point. My second question for you is: What did you predict Mary Poppins would be before you watched it?
A classic.
Okay, thank you, Paul. And we are joined today for the first time by Christy's sister, Valerie Geary. Welcome, Valerie.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yeah, so glad you're here. I have two questions for you, actually three questions.
Oh, man.
Boom, boom, boom. First, what you do, then what is your favorite movie genre? And third, how did you predict Mary Poppins would be?
All right, so I am a novelist. I just sold my first novel last summer.
Woot!
Pretty exciting. Woot.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And then my favorite movie genre. Mm-hmm. So this one is kind of hard for me to answer because at first I wanted to say I didn't have one, that I just kind of have eclectic tastes and kind of all across the board. But then I started to watch Mary Poppins again and I realized that actually I have a soft heart for movie musicals. So,
okay, cool.
Wow.
Yeah. Oh, and
so what did you think of the latest Sound of Music with Carrie Underwood?
I tried to watch it.
There's a new Sound of Music?
And
wow.
I think that just because it was the live version kind of threw everything off. Like it didn't have kind of the quality that a movie does. Like it was just more of a Broadway spectacle, which is fine, but not really a movie.
It didn't float your boat.
I predicted that Mary Poppins would be a classic.
Very cool. Thank you again for being here, and thank you for your predictions, guys. Paul.
Yes.
Do you know what's next?
Alert, alert. Target located. Spoilers incoming. Engaging retro rewind reactor.
Come on with me.
It's supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. Even though the sound of it is something quite atrocious, if you say it loud enough, you'll always sound precocious. Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. Spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down. The medicine go down.
Practically perfect in every way.
Mary Poppins can be gone.
When you're with Mary Poppins, suddenly you'll win places you've never dreamed of.
Mary Mary Poppins was released in theaters in August 27th of 1964. It runs about 139 minutes, was directed by Robert Stevenson, and stars Julie Andrews, Dick Van Dyke, and a whole lot of other people, including Edwin. Sorry, he's one of my favorites.
Really?
The estimated budget... Yes, the Mad Hatter. The box office budget was an estimated about six...
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
Oh, my goodness.
I know him from Babes in Toyland, honestly.
With Well, that's... Yeah, yeah. All right. So, do you... What was the estimated budget?
I have no idea. Please continue.
All right, $6 million, okay, and grossed over $100 million in the U.S.
Oh my gosh.
So far,
that is crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
Did we just level up or something?
Well, yeah, the movie leveled up. Oh. It made more.
It started at six.
Got it. I got it. Made bank.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Oh, Mr. Banks.
No. Oh,
worked for a bank.
Well, was there anything else, Paul?
What else do you want to know?
No, that I'm just wondering if I
should
transition.
Made by Walt Disney Productions.
Oh, okay. Huh? Nothing. Let me go ahead and read our memory mind meld of a synopsis for Mary Poppins. A banker father and a beauty pageant mother need a nanny for their children. Many line up, but a strange wind blows in Mary Poppins, along with a bit of magic, to the bank's house. Not to mention, it literally blows the competition away. The nanny Mary Poppins takes the children into lands of animation, jumping into a sidewalk painting with the got a different job every day Bert, and they dance with penguins. Then they laugh in the rafters and dance on London rooftops. Mary Poppins leaves on an umbrella because the parents decide to parent. The father decides to spend more time with his children. They all learn that what is more important than making money is love and family. And speaking of love, let's talk about the things we loved about Mary Poppins.
Yes, let's.
Valerie?
You didn't want to play the Inception sound effect?
Oh, you're right, because the mom was not a beauty pageant contestant.
That's what I was thinking, yeah.
I remember the sash.
She wasn't a beauty.
Yeah, the women's suffragette.
She wasn't a beauty pageant contestant at all. Exact opposite. That was kind of disappointing.
Wow. So how ugly is she, according to you? No, I'm joking.
No. I just meant that she stood for something that was the exact opposite of. She stood for women's rights to vote.
Women.
And
wow, Paul. Wow. Let's come out of this nosedive. Vary, what's one thing you really... loved about Mary Poppins?
Well, Bert is one of my favorite characters.
Oh, okay.
Of pretty much all times.
Nice.
I like just how he just kind of follows his heart and does what he wants to do and doesn't worry so much about where his next meal is going to come from. He's just kind of still has that childlike aspect about him.
Mm-hmm.
And also he's a good dancer. So
he is a good dancer, definitely. And Dick Van Dyke is certainly an enjoyable character enjoyable actor to watch. I don't know, did you ever watch the Dick Van Dyke Show?
I watch it every once in a while now.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't when I was little, but yeah. Every once in a while it comes on reruns. But I did watch, he was in that one like doctor murder mystery show when he was older. I don't remember the name of it though.
I don't either, but yeah, I know what you're talking about. He has like a mustache, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's weird. Paul, what do you think of Bert?
Oh, I thought he was great. I know he gets a lot of flack from, let's say, other people in the biz that I've heard review this movie. They say like Dick Van Dyke's accent is like the worst ever made up one. But
I didn't really notice that. I know his well, like lisp thing, but
no, they say like his fake Cockney accent is like a horrible beyond belief, apparently. But how do they know, like, he didn't really talk like that? Like, that character didn't talk that way.
So
yeah. It's kind of like in California, they had this guy. He's dead now, but, darn it. I can't even think of his name. The caffeine's not kicking in. Sorry.
It's Spitzball.
Yes, exactly. Huell Hauser, who was on California Gold and PBS in California, and he had this weird accent, but he's a native Californian, and if anyone was hired in the movie set to talk like a Californian, they would be fired if they started talking like Huell Hauser. But, so my whole point in that is to say that how do they know that that character didn't talk that way? I thought he was excellent, fun, and enjoyable.
I don't think his accent is critical to the movie's storyline either, so.
Good point.
Yes. And I thought he did. Wait, are we talking about the Bert character or Dick Van Dyke, the actor?
Oh, both. I mean, they're kind of the same.
Oh, okay, I thought he did a good.
Bert.
I thought. Yeah, I was about to say, I thought Dick Van Dyke did a great job as the old banker guy, too.
I didn't realize that till the very end, and the sort of the credit did sort of a twisty, twirly thing to reveal that's who played him. I'm like, oh, that's cool. Nifty.
Yeah.
I never noticed that until this time that I watched it this time around, too. Yeah. I mean, I noticed it during the scene when the banker was dancing.
Oh, you could tell that.
Yeah, but I was like, wait, isn't that... And I was a kid, I didn't realize it.
Yeah. But yeah, that was different.
Yeah, when I was a kid, my dad actually told me, oh, that guy is played by Dick Van Dyke. So throughout the rest of the movie, I kept waiting for Bert to take off his makeup and reveal that he was the old guy. He was like,
that would have been
I didn't understand.
Twist. How confusing.
Well, yeah, because that's his job during then, you know?
Yeah. No, I would have liked that. That would have been really interesting.
No wonder he can get away with all the frivolity of dancing, because he just goes and works at a bank when he needs a little money.
Exactly. He's a bankrolled.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very nice. I didn't have a whole lot of thought about Bert. I mean, he didn't strike me as something... He certainly didn't strike me as something I didn't like, but it wasn't some... He wasn't like a highlight of the movie for me. I did.
Oh, for me.
Well, there were some things that it's almost like he tried foreshadowing things that never occurred. And that was kind of an annoyance. I'll get to that later though. But I do like how he was sort of like the voice of wisdom in a lot of pieces of the story, especially in the end when he's talking to Mr. Banks. About and he tells the children how, you know, you got parents to look after you, but your dad doesn't have anyone. I just liked how he spoke into the different people during the movie.
I think he's a good contrast to Mr. Banks's character as well. Mm. They kind of play off each other, and you know,
yeah,
Burr is kind of this freewheeling kind of guy, and Mr. Banks is rule abiding, and they kind of act as a good play off of each other. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it was kind of weird at that scene they had together inside Mr. Banks' house. Usually don't see the two having a conversation with each other, so that was interesting.
And you almost expect Mr. Banks to buck against Bert, whether...
Yeah, kind of like he did the constable. It was like, well, you're done here. Go help yourself to the meal or something.
Exactly, exactly. Speaking of contrast, though, there was one scene that I thought was interesting where they had a scene with Mr. Banks is really frustrated because of how apparently Mary Poppins is like, she's been there a day or some short amount of time. And the kids love her. And for whatever reason, Mr. Banks is just really down and really like, I think his wife says you're in a foul temper or something like that. And and then they go to, so they set that up. Then they go to Uncle Albert's place where he's like laughing and joyful. I thought that was a really interesting contrast that they go from one person who is just so like at other people's joy to someone who's like so joyful themselves. That was awesome.
So did you like, I was about to say, did you like Uncle Albert's character or?
I thought it was, I'm going to get ahead of myself a little bit by saying there are elements of this movie that I don't know how they were serving the movie. I didn't quite get what the point of them was.
Yeah, so, that's purpose. What was the lesson to be learned from it?
Well, why?
Or
what was the point of going to see Prince Albert? I didn't quite get that. It's cool
because he was in a
them
can.
Fly. They're in a... Oh, my gosh. Did I say Prince Albert? Maybe I did.
Yes, you did. Cut.
Yes, you did.
Uncle Albert.
Uncle Albert.
Yes. But what did you guys think about that scene or Uncle Albert in general?
When I was a kid, that used to be one of my favorite scenes.
Oh, yeah?
And that whole song about some people laugh through their noses and they do all the different sounds.
That is so kind of fun, yeah.
But when I watched it this time around, I found it kind of annoying. Mm-hmm. And I had the same thought, like, why are they, you know, up on the ceiling? What's going on? How did they get up there? Mm-hmm. But then, I mean, I think it kind of plays in still with the whole idea of holding on to childhood and imagination and that playfulness for as long as you can. Mm-hmm. And that Uncle Albert represents that, like you were saying, the joyfulness of life and laughing at silly little things and kind of just getting high on that laughter.
Yeah. That's a good point. And something else. Oh, go ahead, Paul.
No, go for it. I'm saving up my ammo.
Okay. I was going to say something else that occurred to me just as you were saying that, Vari, was that it's also a good setup for later on when they call it back with the old banker sort of rising as he's laughing, because at his age, it's kind of hard to tell if he's like dying or if he's actually laughing. I know
they
he does,
at the end, right?
But you don't know if he's like, he could be just dying, like he's like dying.
Oh, and that's as opposed a soul to dying rising from up?
Happy. No. Just that you could tell that he was happy because he's lifting up and he was laughing because they had set that up with Uncle Albert.
And then you kind of also feel like, oh, this is probably going to kill him because he's old. But I mean, if you're going to die, dying of laughter seems like a good way
totally.
To go.
Yeah, totally.
That's why they hired Mr. Banks. He's like, you found the best way to kill my father. We're going to make you partner. Which was weird. But anyway,
Go ahead, Paul.
Yeah.
Laughing on the ceiling
and the rafters there. That is one of my favorite scenes as a child. And even when I recently watched it as an adult, I thoroughly enjoyed it. I was laughing along with them, although not quite that hard.
Yes.
But you ever been so tired where you're just laughing at like the silliest things and you are laughing so hard and tears are coming out of your eyes?
Yeah.
That's what kind of reminds me of it. But as an adult, I'm watching this, and I think the whole point of this is to teach children lessons. And one of the lesson that I think that can be derived from this scene is that, yes, laughter has a place and there's a good points for it, but people who focus on that and, you know, always go after the high are that's not good either, because they can't get anything done and they're just always
stuck
caught
up in the air.
Right. Okay, and so I think it's a good reminder that, you know, where laughing and having a good time has its purpose, but if you're always doing that, then you won't have the time for other things in life.
Okay. That's really interesting.
So I liked it. Thumbs up all the way from me.
And you know what? We got someone from Facebook. Regular listener Joe Martin, he commented, haven't seen this one, referring to the movie, in a really long time, but the thing I remember the most is the uncle who suffers from the unnamed medical condition where he breaks out in uncontrollable laughter, which of course leads to levitation and ceiling parties. Well, yeah, of course that happens. then he said, just watch this scene again. It's as epic as I remember, LOL. I forgot about him crying when the kids leave, which is kind of sad. Though I thought
that's all part of it.
I thought Bert's joke at the end, I thought that was as clever as any of the other jokes. I didn't know why he didn't think that was funny.
Yeah, that got the biggest laugh out of me.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Interesting. Cool. Paul, what was something that you really liked about the movie?
The songs, the written by the Sherman Brothers.
Interesting.
Okay. The Sherman Brothers, who wrote the soundtrack for this and some of the other Disney songs in my book, are some of the top notch, music and lyricists, ever. And this soundtrack is, I think, very well done. It's one of those ones where, okay, when I'm listening to my music, it's almost always on shuffle. But there's these rare occasions where I will put on just an entire album. It's very rare. And one of those albums that I will put on and listen all the way through is the soundtrack to Mary Poppins.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah, so I enjoyed. I mean, you know, not every song is like a home run, but they are very, very well done and very enjoyable to me.
Vari, what did you think about the music from Mary Poppins?
I mean, it's fantastic. I mean, there are songs that you... when you listen to as a kid, they're fun. But then when you listen to them later as an adult, you know, like now, it's a song that brings back so many memories and stuff that, I mean, you can't help but like tap your foot or dance. I mean, when you were playing the trailer, I know this isn't a visual podcast, obviously, but if you could have seen us, we were all bopping our heads and dancing along. And it's just, there's songs that you can sing along with. And they just are so full of life. And I love them. Mm-hmm. I mean, like
Paul. And memorable.
Like Paul is saying, there's a few that kind of are like, okay, let's just skip through this one a little bit faster. But there's just so many that, like, my favorite, one of my favorites is the Jolly Holiday song where they're in the sidewalk painting and with the penguins and when the sheep are singing and stuff. Oh, okay. That was one of my favorites as a kid.
Cool. Yeah, I would say I'm actually kind of the flip side of you guys. I only liked a couple of the songs, but for the most part, I didn't care for the score. But also, since there are a couple I like, I did enjoy Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious and Chim Chimney.
Very good. You said it.
What?
Supercala.
No, I said very good. You said it. That's what Mr. Bank says.
Oh, gosh.
And as a kid, it was hard for me to say it. It took me a while to learn that word.
It took me a while to say it backwards like she does. But
can you do it?
Oh, say no, it. Do it. Then you can't.
Super.
Well, he is not practically perfect in every way.
No, I am not. Speaking of practically perfect in every way, I really liked Julie Andrews in this. I thought she was great. Such an engaging character.
Here.
So many great lines. Wit and like the one that I wrote down as being really especially interesting or that I liked especially was the... that's a pie crust promise. Easily made, easily broken. I thought that was interesting. Though I'm like, I don't think it'd be very easy to make a pie crust, but that's me.
They're pretty easy to make.
Oh, well then there you go.
And very easy to break.
Yes. I knew the breaking part. But cool. So it sounds like you like Julie Andrews, Paul, as Mary Poppins.
Yeah. When you ask me the question, who would be great to play it today? I don't know, but I can't imagine anyone doing a better job than Julie Andrews. And maybe that's because I grew up with it, but I don't know. But I thought she did an absolutely fantastic job.
Agreed. How about you, Valerie? What did you think about her performance?
Fine. I mean, I like Julie Andrews, and I think she's fantastic. So I could speak more about the character of Mary Poppins.
Go for it, yeah.
I mean, Julie Andrews played her magnificently. Mm-hmm. One of the things I like about Mary Poppins is that she kind of has a sadness to her that you don't notice at first.
I could see that.
Because she's kind of this woman who lives a rather lonely life. She drifts in and out of people's lives and touches people. You know, she hangs out with them for a moment and changes their life, and then she has to leave. And there's kind of a sadness there, especially at the end. And one of my favorite things that she says towards the end was when she's with Mr. Banks and he's asked her something, I don't know, and she's like, there's one thing you should know, Mr. Banks, or something like that. She says, I never explain anything.
Oh, yeah.
And just kind of her independence and how she just kind of portrays this strong woman.
How does she get away with that?
And, boldness.
Yes. So I just really admired her character. And I think seeing her now... as an adult was a little bit different than when you're a kid. You kind of see her as this, you know, she's practically perfect in every way. She's a little vain, you know, she's very always looking in the mirror, but kind of seeing her now kind of added a new layer to her that I hadn't really noticed before. And I always wondered if there was some kind of romantic fling between her and Bert that
me
was
too.
You know, like adding to that sadness.
There's not supposed to be.
Well, I'm okay. This is
according to the books. There aren't.
I was going to say, but based on the books, is there anything in the books? If either of you have read those, I have not.
No, it's on my to-do list.
Okay. Have you read
them? I haven't, no.
Oh, okay. All right. But you know for a fact, Paul, that it's not in the books, or?
Correct.
Oh, okay. Thank you, Wikipedia / Google.
I think it's nice that, I think it's good that they don't specifically say one way or the other in the movie. That mm-hmm. it's just kind of as, it could just be a friendship that is, mm-hmm. you know, it's a little bit sad that they have to leave each other and yeah. they don't get to have that friendship all the time. But.
Yeah, totally. Great. Well, fantastic, guys. Anything? Oh, else
I also like the dancing penguins.
Like the dancing penguins. All right.
Yes.
That's nice.
Anything jolly and fun and silly like that.
Well, did you like the animation overall, Paul?
I did. I like the idea of jumping into the picture and having them against the chalk drawing backgrounds. And yeah, I like the whole dancing penguin. I thought it was cool, a fun idea to for Dick Van Dyke's character Bert to have his pants go all the way down, but not go down. You know what I mean? But
yeah,
to him to dance like
pants.
A penguin.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. That's very creative in all that way.
When I first when I was watching the animated part this time around, at uh-huh. first I was a little bit like, this is kind of ridiculous, this is kind of silly. But then at the end of the scene when they come back out of the painting, I kind of had a mm-hmm. thought,
or
like
it's raining.
Yeah, I kind of had this thought like, okay, so maybe they weren't really inside the painting. What if they were just using their imaginations?
And I actually had that conversation with Christy just earlier today. I'm like, what did you think about that? And she. I think she said something to the effect that it could be either. I tend to lean more towards
hallucinated drugs.
Imagine
you know
lead
Bert,
based
you
chalk.
You know Bert.
You know, that could do that. You know Bert.
It's got a little something.
Too much soot,
but
I think you do.
Got a little something on the sleeve.
yeah, for me, the animation was fine. I think it was on par with Disney from back then. Certainly nothing at mm-hmm. all like what they could do today, but
I really don't think you should be comparing
oh,
as
yeah.
1960
I should be.
Something movie.
I should be comparing. what did you guys think about the sort of, I guess dichotomy might be the word, between the Mr. and Mrs. Banks? How, for me, I thought it was interesting that Mrs. Banks...
oh, she said... Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
I was going to say how Mrs. Banks is very like women's rights and like, yes,
and
yes,
men
yes.
are stupid.
And men are, well, how did she say
and then
that?
Yeah, she says
and,
that.
Okay. Yeah.
And then Mr.
men
Banks
are rather
comes in
stupid.
And she's all very subservient, I guess I'd say to
yes.
him. And it's like, if she's, yes. it's almost like, I mean, I guess that's kind of real because there, I mean, I could see. I'm sure there are people that like have these convictions, but then are timid or afraid when they're around people they know. But
I don't think it's a dichotomy in 1910. Okay. Whenever it was set, I mean, the suffragette movement was fairly new, and mm-hmm. she's still in this very formal, rigid household where the man is running the household like he runs his bank, you know. Mm-hmm. And I mean, mm-hmm. I think that she wants to try and keep the peace and and support her husband. I mean, just because a woman wants to have women's right doesn't mean that she also wants her husband to fail. I mean, she wants to have support her family and her husband, but mm-hmm. it is I guess you could say a dichotomy, but at the same time it makes sense.
Yeah.
There is a dichotomy because she says in the song that, you know, individually they're pretty smart, but as a group men are rather stupid. And then he mentions later in the movie that something about women almost on the same level. So there is a dichotomy there. But she, I hope I don't offend anyone when I say this, but she knows her place, meaning that if she serves him the way she does, then she will get food and shelter. You know, they each have their role to play. And so I think they show that and do that well. That I was surprised, but in each one playing their role, there isn't that argument that I think movies today that have a lot of arguing between husband and wife. But she isn't completely subservient or submissive, I should say, because she tells him to be quiet when the children are saying their advertisement, their advertisement part. So she does butt in when she thinks it's really important.
And I think that maybe perhaps you underestimate the wife's ability to manipulate her husband by doing what he wants and then later coming around and doing something else. So,
yeah.
I mean, as long as, like,
she feels very smart to me. Like, she knows what she's doing. Mm-hmm.
So let me take it one step deeper, guys. So there was.
Oh, okay.
So they both Mrs. Banks is and Mr. Banks are sort of very caught up in their own lives that are almost divorced from their children. It's like they expect their children to just be objects almost, is the sense I get based on their introductions, Mrs. Banks' introduction and Mr. Banks' introduction. I thought
that's about to say that's essentially what the nanny's for, but not completely. But go ahead.
Well, yeah. So I thought it was interesting that they both, Mr. and Mrs. Banks, have this idea of what perfection of a family would be. And really, as you get toward the end of the movie, you move toward this idea that really the ideal for a family is the mom and dad engaged with one another and with their children, as opposed to they lead sort of separate lives where they're just pursuing their own goals and aspirations.
I think that Mrs. Banks hinted at that when she said, no, let's listen to the children's advertisement, wording on the advertisement. But then Mr. Banks didn't go along with it. They didn't join together and make this advertisement together. But at the end, I think you're right, they learned to fly the kite together.
Yeah.
Yeah, the parents seemed a little out of touch and distant to me at first. And I think that's the whole point. At the beginning, mm-hmm. they're supposed to have that, you know, like, oh, kids are you know, just there to carry on the household name or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then and they go about doing their own thing. And then as the movie goes along, you see that growth of them coming together as a family.
Exactly.
But I found, I connected with it because of, I mean, the idea of the parents and kids having that distance and kids wanting to be heard and the parents not listening. So,
yeah. And so all that to say is that's something that I really liked about the movie and that the sort of overall arc of it. But Valerie, what was something else you really liked about Mary Poppins?
Okay. So this is kind of really specific, like a specific detail kind of, I found, so when Mr. Banks gets called into the office that night to get fired, mm-hmm. that walk when he's walking...
Oh, it's like the mobsters took over.
So when he's walking from his house to the bank, so before he even gets into the bank, that scene to me was just so beautiful. Like the way they put it together and the storytelling and just that one scene alone where he... The visual aspects of it to me, the darkness and the shadows mm-hmm. and light.
Yeah.
But then he stops in front of the cathedral to look for the bird woman, but she's gone. Mm-hmm. He's too late. He has missed his chance.
So she was gone. See,
yeah.
The I don't know what maybe it was just because I was watching a standard definition version of it, but it was so dark I couldn't tell if she was there or if she wasn't.
She was gone.
Okay.
And just that powerful, like that emotional switch mm-hmm. in his, you can see it. And I just found that scene incredibly moving.
Mm. Yeah, totally. Very cool. Did you have any thoughts?
I thought it was I thought it was dark and ominous, maybe a little too dark, but I did find it touching with the woman not being there. I did notice that. But then I thought it was weird how these bankers are like all dignified and distinguished and, you know, honorable, and then they go and they rough him up. Well, not physically, but, you know, they break his things.
It.
And I was like,
punch a hole
that's
in his
so
hat.
Yeah, that's such a bully move. He could sue them for like destruction of property.
I thought the exact same thing.
They had to humiliate him. I mean, they had to do. And what's more humiliating than punching in a man's hat?
Yeah, right.
Well, we won't go into that. But name calling, if you're creative enough, if you want to, if hey, creative name calling. Watch. Yeah, I was about to say there. Watch the movie Hook. Anyway.
Okay.
Rufio. So what did you think about that scene?
Yeah, I'm totally getting derailed. I'm sorry. I thought it was interesting the way they lit the very end where it does go in, and it's just like they might as well be in a void or in a black hole except for the one spot in the room where, and they're all wearing red.
Yeah.
It's like they're bloodthirsty sharks essentially. I thought it was just really interesting how they
set that up. That's creative insight there.
Paul, was
I didn't think of that.
What was something else you really liked about?
The choreography. I enjoyed the dancing, especially like in Step in Time. That was fun to watch, especially as a kid.
Interesting. I actually found it was a bit sloppy that in that scene, the choreography.
There were moments, yeah, that could have been done better, but overall, that's like a very long segment. It's like over 10 minutes long or something like that.
Okay.
And to be able to fill that with that many different moves and everything, yeah, it's a bit on the long side, but I thoroughly enjoyed it as a kid, and I was amazed at the different creative things that you can do up on railings for 8 minutes.
Did you have any thoughts about the choreography, Valerie? Was that something you liked, or
Yes. Okay. I mean, are we specifically talking about the Step in Time? Because that's my most loved part.
Oh, well, a perfect transition then.
So the Step in Time is my favorite part of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Would
you say that if there's one thing that made Mary Poppins a classic, it would be Step in Time? Not to give away your final rating, but...
Well, I don't think there's one thing that makes Mary Poppins a classic. I think it's a whole combination of things. And I think Step in Time is a good example of both the song being amazing, the choreography being incredible, the tone of the visuals itself, and then the interaction with the family and the children. Like, I love when all the chimney sweeps go down the Banks' chimney and they come out and they make just this horrible mess, and it's just chaos. And then Mr. Banks comes in and they're like, "Hello, governor," and they're all running out the door.
What's all this?
I think that there's just such a sense of play and fun and wonder, and I mean, they're up on these rooftops, and it's like this. The whole movie is kind of about seeing things in a different way, in a new way, instead of the old way, just kind of like taking a different look. And so they're up on the rooftops looking at London in a different light. Yeah. And I think there's just a lot in that scene that is powerful and fun.
Interesting. I didn't think about it in that aspect, but yeah, that's totally.
Well, maybe you should.
Paul, what would you say would be one thing from that you loved about the movie that if anything would make it a classic, it would be that thing. Again, not to give away whether you did rate it a classic or second class.
Yeah, that's hard because I agree with Valerie. It's so many parts are so well done, and it's hard to pick just one moment. But I guess the one that sticks in my head, when someone says Mary Poppins, I automatically think of this entire scene inside the drawing, the animated / live action combo.
Oh, interesting. Okay. I mean, yeah, and you see that in a lot of advertisements, and that's where Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious is from. So yeah, I could totally see that.
Yeah.
I mean, isn't that like the first time that they did that in a movie too, where they combined that animated and live action? And
Paul? No, they did that with
Bed Knobs and Broomsticks.
I think that was after.
I think that came after, but I think
Looney Tunes,
Song of the
maybe?
South was one of the earlier ones.
With the
and
Blueberry,
Looney Tunes,
right?
Well, and Disney both did. Actually, Disney did in the black and white with the Alice in Wonderland Adventures. But it was well done with the quality.
Cool. For me, I would say. I agree with you guys. It's kind of a tough thing. It was sort of a toss up between two for me. But I'd say the thing that just really gets me that I think is so interesting and almost very understated, which is maybe why I like it the most, is you have Mary Poppins sings about Is it Miss Tuppence? Is that her name, essentially?
No, she's just the bird lady.
The bird lady. Okay.
Tuppence is the coin.
See, that's what sort of confused me about it. I'm like, what? Okay, anyway, the bird lady, Mary Poppins sets her up. And so they when the children, Michael and Jane, go with their dad to the bank, they stop by and Michael's like, very much they see the bird lady and he wants to give him his money. And he's like, don't do that. His dad's like, don't do that. Don't do that. Come along. And then they go. And so we have the bird lady who's very giving of herself, trying to feed the birds, mm-hmm. and brings sort of this giving nature out of Michael in that. And then they go into the bank and the bankers say about how investing is so great and you need to do this to build your empire or whatever. And they actually, the old banker takes the money out of Michael's hand. And then Michael's very much like, no, it's mine. It's mine. It's mine. Give it back to me. It's almost like it's very interesting how these two different influences bring out of him two very different things. This idea of an open hand giving and a closed hand mine. I loved that difference and that contrast. And I think it speaks a lot to how, you know, the you can be influenced by these different outside forces.
Yeah, and it's amazing. It seems like they both try to influence him with the song Mary Poppins with the Tuppence a Bag and then the bankers with...
I think what I like about what you're saying with the closed fist and the open hand, mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of those different contrasts in the movie mm-hmm. with the adult and child and giving and taking. And I think that part of it speaks to that we can hold both things in ourselves, that we don't necessarily have to be one or the other. We can have that duality.
That's totally. And yeah, we definitely...
We don't have to be cartoon or real. We can be both.
Oh, wow. Many layers like an onion.
Yes, I'm liking it. Da 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 da. Our next sponsor.
What? An onion?
An onion? America's Farms.
Sure.
I want, before we move on to the things we didn't so much like about Mary Poppins, if there were any, for me, there certainly were. Christy Ruiz wrote on Facebook, I love this movie. It's a classic. I still sing some of the songs and have fond memories watching this with my sister. Oh, hey, her sister's right here.
Hello. Hello.
All righty. Let's move on to the things we didn't like about Mary Poppins. Paul didn't like her hats? Okay.
But how else would you know the silhouette of Mary Poppins without her hat?
That's true. That's true.
Yeah. Maybe if she was always holding an
umbrella. I just personally wouldn't wear it.
Okay.
No, it's fine. It's fine.
We know what to get Paul for Christmas.
Yes,
Christmas is already passed for his birthday.
Well, it's a movie prop. We'd have to save up. So we have a year now.
Yes.
I'm not even going to dignify that because that's so petty, Paul.
Yeah, it was meant to be a joke. Look, what don't you like about Mary Poppins? Let me see. Her hat.
Because there is nothing not to like about Mary Poppins.
She's practically perfect. Something that wasn't terribly appealing to me were the opening credits. They just took too long. And it was like, I know they're doing an overture of all the music that's to come, but it's like, just get on with this.
But that's the style of those movies back then. So I don't know that you can necessarily judge a movie based on that because that's how they made them back then.
That's like saying
the movie was too grainy.
Yeah.
For whatever, but I mean, if...
Just fast forward through that part if you're bored with
that. That's a good point. And that's a good point. But I'm just trying to say based on this watch, something that didn't appeal to me was the length of the beginning. I am aware lots of movies back then did the same thing. This is not like out of place at all, but it was an annoyance for me.
I also think that it sets up something in that Mary Poppins is in the cloud and her stuff is falling. And so you kind of get this idea that it's going to be a magical kind of movie.
That's a good point.
Yeah. And it also sets it up, embraces the audience that this is going to be a long movie, much like its long opening credits.
So you should go to the bathroom now and get your popcorn ready.
Good point.
Yeah. Actually, one of the things that impressed me is that looking at it now as an adult, that the background is kind of like a painting.
Mm-hmm.
They had this painter's But then with the far away shot of Mary Poppins also looked like a painting, yet she was moving. I was like, wow, that's impressive, especially for back then.
I never thought about that, but yeah, that's a good point. Cool.
So anyway, so that the opening credits, especially at the end there, impressed me with that. Well, although that's not really the credits part, but in the how they did that, it was, even by today's standards, I thought that was very well done.
Well, that's nice, Paul, though we're not really in the likes section. Valerie.
Well, then don't mention things that you don't like that I do.
So there were two things for me that I didn't like. There were a few other things that I also didn't like, but then I managed to talk myself out of not liking. Of,
there you go.
You know, like I would say, oh, I don't like this, but then I would think about it and it would make sense.
Okay.
But then there were two things that definitely didn't make sense and stayed not making sense, and I didn't like them. So, so I guess a couple of...
The fact that she would talk to a dog when saying the nitty position has been filled.
I love that part. It's so adorable. Andrew's just like, woof, and he runs away. So one of the things that I initially didn't like but then talked myself out of was that Mary Poppins felt a little bit up and down to me, like her moods. Like one minute she's playing with the children, and the next she's like, no, that didn't happen, or no, we need to go to bed now. Like she was just very like up and down. Yeah. But then I kind of, while I was saying I didn't like it, then at the same time I was like, well, it kind of adds a little layer to her personality in that we see, she's not perfect. No, she's not perfect. Like she's human just like us.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
But still, it was just kind of, sometimes I was like, wait, why is she suddenly changed her attitude here?
I thought she was trying to teach the children there's a time for play and there's a time for bed and there's different times for different things.
Yeah. And when it is time to play, it makes sense that she'd be fun loving, and when it's time for bed, lay down the law.
And I think as an adult, I recognize that. But as a kid, I was like, why is she mean?
Good point, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And it's almost like we don't talk about such nonsense.
Yeah.
You know? Yes. It's like, don't tell anyone. we're going to have a lot of fun, and then you're all going to be little liars. No, I'm sorry.
What was something you didn't like, Paul? If there was anything.
I'm trying to think. And I don't remember anything that it's like, the whole idea of I like the idea of the captain of the ship on top of a house, you know, firing a cannon is one thing, but shaking the whole neighbor's house seems a little far-fetched. I know, you know, you're supposed to put
yeah, because that's like an 8.0 earthquake happening each time, and I don't think it's going to do that. That's a good point.
Somebody surely would have called the cops by then.
Constable, get over here.
And if the police never did anything, why would people live there?
That's yes. Yes.
Good.
Yes.
Point.
That is one thing that I did not like.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Admiral Boom.
Admiral Boom is not my favorite.
Yeah.
I thought he was a fun character. Like, if you're a retired Navy guy and you have like the top of a ship on your house, that's pretty cool.
But what's his point? What's his point?
Yes.
Why is he in the gossip? Movie?
Is the point.
And he's also the timekeeper, maybe. He knows when the wind changes.
You don't need...
Well, so does the weather vane.
Yeah, exactly. All you need is a weather vane on top of the bank's house.
He seems extraneous to the movie. He seems a little out there, a little eccentric.
I thought he was a fun, creative character to show the creativity of the movie.
I feel like...
But that's just me.
He may need to be in a madhouse, because I'm not sure... Like when they're washing the window, they're in like their boat, like the little pond.
Yeah, that was But I don't know. I wouldn't go as far as to say it's like, oh, I don't like that. That's stupid. Like, I think it makes the movie horrible. Yeah, so, Francisco, what did you think that was horrible that ruined the movie?
Well, I'll save my worst thing for last.
I don't think Admiral Boom ruined the movie. I just think that it was kind of one of those things where you're like, why is this in here?
Yeah, but. And I would agree. I would say that, yeah. One other thing that I didn't really like, and I alluded to before, were I didn't really care for a lot of the songs. Except for those two, they just seemed... it was like...
Which two?
I liked Supercalifragilistic and Chim Chimney. And I'm
you
not
didn't
sure,
like Spoonful of Sugar?
It was fine. I mean,
also, you didn't not like it.
But
are you singing it in your head right now? Because
no, I'm singing super fragilistic. Here's the thing.
Oh, it's a jolly holiday.
I don't have a great explanation. Okay.
Poor taste.
It seemed like some of the music wasn't moving, progressing the story. I feel like musicals typically, and Valerie is a fan of musical movies, or doesn't it seem like typically the music is progressing some element of the story? It's not just the music, a music for music's sake.
The music in Mary Poppins was progressing the elements of the story quite nicely.
Some of it was. I don't know.
You just weren't listening hard enough.
Hey, Francisco. I would say that typically today that's true, but not necessarily back then.
All right.
Back then it was just the ambiance of the movie. It's kind of like, hey, let's hang a nice picture here because we can.
And
today it progresses. It's like that's the only reason why they have songs is because they don't want long exposition. They'll just put a song there.
And you know what? That's probably just what I'm accustomed to now is songs having there's a definite need for a song. It's not just hanging a pain or it's not just fluff. We could certainly argue over whether the songs in Mary Poppins were that. I seem to think that they were. I wish I could give you a concrete example. I think the one you just sang, Mary.
It's a jolly holiday.
Holiday with Mary.
I think.
Oh,
that
it's
was
building
one.
Their relationship and telling you how they
and
are
it's showing that everybody loves
to
Mary.
What? They don't. I'm getting ahead
it
of myself.
No, it shows
Mary's
that everybody
character.
Loves Mary.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, right. I agree.
Anyway, Vary, what was
and it,
you said you
we've
had,
already said that the Tuppence lady song was to convince Michael to give, and the banker's song was to convince Michael to give to them. So those are both plot points. I mean, we can go down every one and prove Francisco wrong.
Yes,
so
we can.
Valerie, why don't you go ahead?
I'm gonna need a song list, I think.
Or what was the other thing that that you did not like?
Okay, so at the end, they're flying their kites and it's all happy and wonderful, and then
don't tell me the parrot. The parrot was on the umbrella.
No.
Okay, I'm.
The banker comes and says, "Hey, Mr. Banks, do you want your job back?" And he's like, "Yes, I do." It just negates everything that he's learned, and he's just going to go back to being his same old self with his same old rules and his same old, you know, ideals.
And he's
going to
go back.
What, Paul?
Same old bills to provide for his same old family.
Yeah, and I completely agree with you. In fact, the other thing that I've been really loving, like my most loved thing, was that he breaks free of this trap of being sort of enslaved to the bank and the toil of that. And he's able to he sees how amazing it is to be with his wife and children. And investing there and having his heart move toward them. And then, when he gets that job back.
And it's funny because it was his father worked for the bank too. So he's been in this cycle of I'm just following my father's footsteps. Whereas I feel like, yes, he needs a job to pay bills for his family, but he could have done a little bit of job searching, gone out into all of London and found something that's a little more flexible.
I mean, even,
Okay, I'm saving up my ammo.
Okay, they could have easily, he could have, instead of repairing the kite of his kids, he could have gone downstairs and came out with this amazing, like, artistic kite. And it's like, whoa, this guy's a born kite maker. Let me finish. Born kite maker.
No.
They go out, fly the kite. Everyone wants to buy a kite. There's your job.
Maybe, except then
that's
it would have
Bert's
had
job.
That connection with the children where he connects with the children through the kite that they made. He fixes it.
Exactly.
Paul, convince us why this ending works.
All right. Here's why this ending works. His dad was a banker. He's been working as a banker, let's say 10 plus years, because he's one of the lower managers. Okay.
Okay.
All right. So he has experience in banking. This is what he's good at. This is what he does best. So for him to go out and find another job, he wouldn't be as good. But he has learned, especially when setting it up with trying to find the bird lady and not being there and laughing in front of the board. He has learned that money isn't everything, okay? That he has learned that money doesn't solve everything. Now, with that lesson learned, he can go in this job and do really well.
I
think it's a great ending.
I suppose that's possible. From my point of view, though, he's one partner versus the other partners that are all senior. It seems like it'd be very easy for them to just lay a bunch of work on him and him to just fall in line because there's no other way other than doing the work.
No, because he will laugh in their faces now.
No, beyond that, I mean, humans fall into routines. Routines are comfortable. It's what we want to have a routine. And so if he goes back to his same job, he's just going to fall into the same routines. And I think that one of the main points...
Except I think that he would be able to stand up to him now that before he wouldn't.
I mean, one of the big themes I see in the movie is that sometimes we need something to happen or we need someone special to come into our lives to shake things up and kind of get us to see things in a new light and reevaluate where we are and what's really important in our lives. And I just really think that going back to the bank would be just same old, same old.
Yeah, and I think he could still, when he comes home, he could have a better relationship with his children. But I could see his time at the bank being just the same, and that could eventually bleed into taking away a relationship from his family. But I think it's certainly possible, Paul, but I think it's more likely.
Let's hope for,
I think
for
we're
Mr.
reading
Banks.
Way into this.
Let's give him
I was
the benefit
about to say
of
we
the
don't
doubt.
Know.
But what about the mom, Mrs. Banks? She doesn't really have any kind of change. I mean, at the beginning she's neglecting her children too.
See, that's where I disagreed with you from the beginning, because she was devoted to her children when it was children time.
No, not right off the bat, because she's like, she asked the two housekeepers to take care of them because she doesn't. Yes. She has her thing to do.
Whoa.
And she
you
still
sound
does.
A little, yeah, she can't have things to do. Mr. Banks has things to do. I think what Paul is pointing out is that there's children time and then there's I'm an adult and I have important things that I'm doing. It's not always children time. And I think that maybe what Paul is saying is that Mrs. Banks, when it's children time, she says, okay, let's listen to the children and let's interact with them. And maybe we don't see her doing that as much as we should, but she does. Whereas Mr. Banks is always tuning out the children.
Oh, well, I was going to say that her progression toward being more in tune with the children, it certainly is there, and a lot more happens a lot sooner than Mr. Banks, which is at the end. Mm-hmm. But I'm just saying there is this sense that her children are certainly not that
neglected.
Children should be the first thing in your life, especially, I mean, my belief is that your spouse should come before your children. But I think she's putting a lot of things ahead of her children that I think her children should be ahead of. And that's just my perception. At the beginning, I think
that's for
that
child services to decide.
She's a woman with ideas, and she's got things to do and worlds to change, and she needs some time to do that.
All right, that's fine.
I think her character doesn't show it. I don't see a character arc there because I don't think she needs one.
Okay.
I don't see a character arc, and I don't think she needs one.
Got it. Okay. Was that something else that you didn't like, Paul? Or you did like that she didn't have an arc, or I guess I missed that.
No, I think it was fine.
Okay. Well, then was there something else you didn't like, or is that about it?
One of those animated pigs was just weird. No, I'm joking.
Yeah. I was going to say, this is a Paul joke right now.
That Mary Poppins ordered food and didn't get good service from the penguins. There was no food that came to that table.
Good point. Gosh.
No tea.
Jeez, penguins. At least serve ice. You should know a thing or two about ice. Was there anything else you didn't like, Valerie? Go ahead, Paul. Is this your thing? If you don't have anything else, is this your thing that if anything would make Mary Poppins second class, this would be it?
Oh, let me think about that.
Okay, Valerie, do you have anything?
I don't have anything else that I didn't like. And
then of those two things, which would make Mary Poppins a second class?
For me, I would say the length of the movie. Some of the scenes were longer than they needed to be, but yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I would cut a minute or two off of each scene almost, but
then let me close out this dislike hate section with the thing that I think would make Mary Poppins a second class. It's essentially taking what Paul just said to the extreme. And
cut it out. The whole thing.
All the songs. He wants to get rid of all the songs.
It should never have been made.
Your ire and who's ever listening's ire. But here, I have to say this. The whole sequence.
You don't have to.
I guess I don't have to, but I'm going to. The whole sequence in the countryside painting just seems like. All of it seems like filler. There's no point to that whole scene. I'd say you could cut.
There's no point to Uncle Albert either.
All right, cut that too.
It's an imaginative romp. I mean, it's kids being kids and showing how like you can just take a sidewalk painting and pretend that you're going on the merry-go-round. Just the horses come off and then you're in a fox hunt and
maybe okay. I could let me back up a little bit. If the only reason they did this scene was to show both the novelty of live action and animation together, or it's to like be this fanciful thing for kids to just enjoy, it could be that too. But for me, it was just so boring and it just took too long. I know Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious, which is one of my nice favorite songs came out of that, but it just went on and 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 on.
So you have the intention span of a gnat, is what you're telling us.
But there was no point to it. I could see it.
Sure, there was a point.
More,
you just missed the point.
I could see it being way more interesting and valuable for as a whole scene or set or not scene, a whole sequence. If there was payoff for Mary Poppins and Bert's relationship, because it did seem like some sort of like romance or kindling was going on there, but then nothing happens with that. It's like, okay, so why are you setting up anything if nothing's going to happen? It's like,
it's for the sequel.
The children are just like on the carousel and they're just along for the ride, I guess. But
I almost feel like this movie would be too serious without that sequence. That it would be.
Maybe a less serious movie then? I don't know.
It would be less imaginative, less creative, less fantastical and
But I think the stuff on the chimney is very fantastical, I think.
Well, sure, but it's not as.
It plays to the sense of childhood, and I think if you took it out, you would have too much of an adult movie and you wouldn't have that contrast of kid holding on to that innocence and that playfulness for as long as you can.
That is a really good point. Go ahead, Paul.
The idea of seeing a picture and being like, wow, I wonder what it'd be like to be there and actually do that is a fantastic idea. And it's creative and it's imaginative.
It is. I guess if it just didn't go on as long as it did, I would have totally bought into it. I think that's my main gripe with it. It's just,
and also you get to see Bert save a fox and then you just love him even more because he's just this amazing person who saves foxes and dances on rooftops. And he's a one-man band.
That was cool. But I gotta say, by the time they get to the fox stage, I was like tuning out. You saying that Bert saved him, I didn't know that. I don't recollect that because it is just like, I'm done processing what's going on right now.
Because Francisco did not have a jolly holiday.
I guess not.
With Mary.
So if anything was going to make Mary Poppins, for me, a second class, it'd be that scene. Which I know you guys loved really much. Loved a lot, but that's just me.
So what scene did you like the most?
I really liked the whole contrast between the bird lady Michael and then Michael in the bank.
Okay.
I also really liked Mr. Banks coming back to his children, sort of realizing because of what Bert said that, you know, his family's way more important.
Yeah, slipping away from him as yes. he's working at the grindstone.
Exactly.
Oh, that was another musical that moved, mm-hmm. a song that moved the story.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, maybe just the Jolly Holiday didn't move the story for you.
Maybe that was the only one and so it soured me for all of them. But...
Yes. Wow.
Just before we get on to our review of Mary Poppins, our final review, I am curious, what did you guys think about in the very beginning when the winds change? Bert says the line, all that is to happen has happened before. It seemed like he was setting up something for later on, but I never made a connection with what
the
that was
whole
saying.
Movie. Do you know why? You didn't get that? No. Because they know each other. They met each other before. They've had him and Mary have had adventures before. And, you know, they know Uncle Albert and all this. So they've had fantastical. That's why Bert was saying, hey, we can go into these pictures because they've done that before. Mm-hmm. It's all happened before. Okay.
You know what? That makes a lot more sense. But I thought the whole I was, you know what, guys? I totally went Matrix on this and was thinking, okay, so the machine set up the one and Zion seven times now. Because I thought they were saying love, like there's a Jane and a Michael and a Mr. and Mrs. Banks. Maybe their cults are different, but it was the same thing.
I think he was giving Mary Poppins' resume and that she had already been a nanny before and changed.
Actually, okay. You're close. This all actually happened within one 24-hour period, and that was Groundhog Day. And it's happened again and again and again.
Not Mary Poppins again.
Okay.
Didn't learn your lesson. Here we go again.
All right. Thank you guys for you know giving me some thoughts on that. I was just curious.
But seriously, that they it all happened before because they had those Mary Poppins had those adventures before.
That makes perfect sense. Thank you for putting that to rest for me.
Anything else?
No, that's all.
I thought you said that there were his characters set up like foreshadow things that didn't come true. So I was wondering if there was anything else.
No, that was it.
Is there another long list of things you didn't that we can change your mind about?
After that. Two plus hour movie, that one line just disrupted everything?
No, it didn't. It's just a curiosity. It wasn't something I didn't like. I was just curious about it. Like, what does this mean?
He doesn't like the songs, Paul. He doesn't like the songs.
Or maybe he doesn't like Jolly Holidays.
Alice, do you have a firing solution for us?
Firing solution complete. Rating salvo at the ready, on your mark.
All right, ratings. Let's go around. Yes, a rating salvo on your mark. Ready, on your mark.
We're all right, I rate salvo. Right now, I'm rating salvo. I was told by Alice to rate salvo, whatever that means.
I don't even know what that is.
See, nobody knows but you, dude.
Kellen,
I'm sure we've had
Kellen,
this.
Kellen, call in and save me. If you still listen.
Yeah, and past listeners who actually remembered what that was. I don't know.
Let's go around and say whether we thought Mary Poppins was a classic or second class and why.
Why didn't you just say that?
Start with you.
Oh, it was definitely a classic. To the point of vintage. Vintage. Classic.
Okay. Interesting. I've never heard it called that. So what to you makes a classic movie? If like you see a movie, how do you determine?
I think it's a movie that can reach across age boundaries and timelines. So like this movie was made in 1964,
I believe.
Yes,
and I still love it in 2013. And I think that it's a movie that adults can get in touch with their child. Inside their inner child, if you will, and at the same time, kids can enjoy, with their parents or by themselves.
Point.
But, and then specifically for Mary Poppins, I mean, Julie Andrews makes this movie, and it's one of the most, I think, beloved musicals that has been made. I mean, everybody knows the songs. I mean, Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. If you say that word, you know what it's from. Yep, it's a classic,
pretty much. Though I do gotta say, Chrissy has been playing. We have almost 2-year-old now. Well, not quite.
Oh, wow.
Who knows? You're listening to this. You might be five when you're listening to this. Anyway, there's this Pandora channel, an artist called something Baggy Pants. Anyways, it's very fun, like kids music. And they do a cover of Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. And I've heard that so many more times than I've seen Mary Poppins that I actually... It was weird hearing the Mary Poppins original version because I was used to hearing the something Baggy Pants version.
But that cover would never have been made without Mary Poppins.
Oh, no. I'm not Classic. Saying... Of course, yeah. It's just,
See? I've convinced you, haven't I?
A point of interest for me. All right. Thank you, Valerie. So we have classic from Valerie. Paul, how say you?
I say classic because... Classic, okay. If I had some peers over that were my age and hadn't seen it, then they need you to get educated and watch this. Because,
you would chain them to the couch until they watched it.
Well, not necessarily that. It's like, dude, you're just not going to get some references, especially if you're a Disney fan.
Mm-hmm.
If you're, I know a lot of kids who have grown up, let's say, who've been born later before Mary Poppins came out and hasn't seen this yet, I would say if you're a Disney fan, definitely check it out.
You know, kids and who if were you're born not, before Mary Poppins came out?
Yes. My
How
parents.
Are they still kids? Oh, well, okay.
At
Their
heart.
Inner child. Okay. Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
Yes. Yeah, they're still laughing on the ceiling. So, yeah, it's a classic for me.
Awesome.
So, Francisco, how big of a Scrooge are you going to be on this movie?
Bah, humbug. No, guys.
He's going to be an old banker.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, at what stage?
Smith. Okay, I'm good. Done with that. I'm going to have to say Mary Poppins is a classic,
yes.
Guys. it certainly, if it didn't have all these... sublayers, it would not be for me.
Oh,
I found
yeah,
all that sense. That you could watch it on one level as a mm-hmm. kid and get a whole lot new stuff out of it as an adult. That is very enjoyable for me. I love that when movies do it. I love it when books or games or any form of media or entertainment or storytelling does that, where you can appreciate it, like you were saying, Valerie, regardless of your age. And so I definitely, though there are parts that I didn't like, on the whole, I definitely enjoyed Mary Poppins, and I would show it to Sophia, because I think it'd be a great movie that we could all watch together.
But he would just mute the songs till they were
done.
Oh,
you bet. I am not, we are not watching, it's a holiday with Mary Jane, or whatever.
Oh my goodness.
I don't know, whatever
You just
it's
took
called.
It to a whole new level. It is a jolly holiday with Mary Jane.
Wow.
Oh, Mary Jane's from Spider-Man. Yeah, at least that's where I know the name.
Uh-huh.
Sorry, I've derailed a little bit. But according to the Retro
Too
Rewind...
Too much Mary Jane.
According to the Retro Rewind podcast, Mary Poppins is a unanimous classic movie.
Boom. All right. Boom.
There we go. That's much better.
Are you sure?
Yes, Paul. Let's Boom. Move on, guys, to our new tube section. And let's wrap it up quick because we are in for a long episode.
New tube systems engaged.
All right, Paul, quickly, what is new on your tube?
I saw the movie Saving Mr. Banks.
Really? Oh, cool.
Yeah.
What a great tie-in.
Oh, this was such a delightful film. I was,
oh, was it?
When it
oh,
first
good.
Started, when it first started, I was like, okay, this isn't going to be as good as I thought. But
was it
gave
a long
me a whole...
intro with like tiles and a
yeah.
matte painting
oh,
that
my
took forever?
Goodness. It was so, oh no. But anyway, it gave me, it with the backstory of the making of this movie, it gave me such, it made me appreciate the movie Mary Poppins even more.
Oh, cool.
So
I
if you
that.
Like, yeah, if you like the movie Mary Poppins, definitely check out Saving Mr. Banks.
Very cool. Valerie, what is new on your tube?
Well, I just got finished reading a novel called Tell the Wolves I'm Home.
Oh, interesting.
Oh, that's not good.
Carol Rivka Brunt. And it was a really interesting book about a 14-year-old girl who just lost her favorite uncle. He died of AIDS. And it's set in like the 1980s and just kind of this coming of age tale of her kind of getting to know her uncle a little bit better after he's already gone and like going through the grieving process. And
yeah, sounds depressing.
Yeah, it made me cry a little bit, but my favorite books are the ones that make me cry, so I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it.
Very cool. Wow. All right.
And what's new on my tube is me and Chrissy went and saw The Hobbit, Desolation of Smaug. And
oh yeah,
I still haven't gotten to see a 48 frames per second Hobbit, and I'm frustrated about that.
Come on, dude.
But even though I think they added quite a bit that wasn't in the books, and I don't know if it's in the appendices, I still really enjoyed it. As from a movie, it was good. I liked it. All right. But we'll have links for all of those in the show notes.
Do you remember playing great PC games like King's Quest, Command & Conquer, and X-Wing? Do you remember spending hours tweaking your config sys and autoexec bat files to eke out just one more K of conventional memory? If you do, then you may be interested in my show, The Upper Memory Block. Every 2 weeks, we talk in-depth about a game, game series, company, or technology from the DOS and pre-Windows XP gaming era. We'll discuss the story, gameplay, and technology of the games of the time. But more importantly, we're going to focus on what made each game special, interesting stories from their development, and how they shaped what PC gaming is today. If you remember gaming in the late 80s and early 90s, or you're interested in finding out more about it, come join your host Joe in the Upper Memory Block. That's the Upper Memory Block podcast at umbcast.com, or find it on iTunes.
Let's move on to our feedback. Alice?
ComSat Online. Receiving incoming transmission.
Still sounds like she says co-sites, not com-sites.
Well, you'd be wrong. We got a couple people commenting. Oh, yeah, that's right, Paul. from a couple different places. First, on our website, which, of course, is RetroRewindPodcast.com. On our Rocketeer episode, which you can find
that
web address /RRP2, way back when Paul and I did our first dual episode, Sean commented saying, "I just stumbled across these podcasts. I highly enjoy them. You guys on Twitter also?" Yes, we are on Twitter. We are at Retro Rewind Cast. And Paul, what's your Twitter?
At Paul J. Powers.
Yep. And I am at FXRUIZX.
Everybody got that?
Everybody got that. Thank you, Sean, for leaving us that feedback. We also got feedback from Joe Martin, who is one of the people that's liked our Facebook page. If you want to like our page, go to... Actually, you can find all the places to like us on social media by just going to RetroRewindPodcast.com/social. And there'll be links to all the places, including Facebook. But like us there, like Joe Martin, who said, "Hey, you mentioned my comment. Thanks, brah." And this was a comment. He made a comment on the Super Mario World episode. And he said, LOL. "Yeah, I usually hear the podcast about a week after they are posted. I always assumed you posted the bulletin here as they were going up, so I didn't realize I was possibly getting mentioned. If I comment in the future, I'll keep it succinct." And all your comments have been succinct, Joe, so don't worry about that. And thank you for listening to the show. And that's one of the things I love personally about podcasts is that you can listen to them whenever you like. So no worries if you listen to them later. With that, let's tell people how they can get in contact with us, which we've kind of already done. If you'd like to get in touch with the show, you could just go to RetroRewindPodcast.com/contact. And there's a handy dandy contact us form that you can fill out, and it'll go to our email. Paul, how can people get in touch with you?
People can find me at pauljpowers.com and links to the social media sites from there. And like I said before, Twitter is at pauljpowers.
Very good. And thank you, Paul, as always, for being the co-host.
You're welcome.
An awesome co-host, interrupting you. I must say. Valerie, how can people contact you if they'd like to get in touch with you?
Well, I am working on getting a new website together. I still have my old one up, though, which is where you can still reach me at valeriegeary.blogspot.com.
Nice.
But I am more active on Twitter,
okay,
which is at Valerie Geary.
Very cool.
And then I also
can you
have,
spell that?
Yes, ValerieGeary.
And we'll have that.
You hear
in the
that,
show,
stalkers?
So you can just find it through the show. You don't have to jot that down this second, especially if you're driving.
I also have a Facebook page, author page. It's Valerie Geary Author.
Nice.
Very cool.
And thank you so much for being on the show today.
Welcome. I had a good time. Thank you.
It was great having you.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, totally. And most of all, thank you, listener, for whether you're working out, whether you're driving to work. Whether you're watching Mary Poppins while you're listening to this.
Yeah, this is the audio commentary.
Exactly.
Spoilers, yeah, as we're not succinct with the movie at all.
But we really appreciate you listening. And that's like amazing. It's still amazing to me that you download the episode and you listen. If you want to,
I think that's what you do on a podcast.
Show your support in other ways, you can subscribe to us on iTunes by going to retrorewindpodcast.com/iTunes RRP. That'll take you right to our iTunes listing. And please rate and review us. We would prefer 5 stars, but however you feel about the show, we prefer an honest rating. And subscribe to us there. That'd be great too, whether it's on iTunes, or you can also subscribe to us on Stitcher Radio or use our RSS feed link to subscribe to us in the podcatcher of your choice. And you know what? Something that I keep neglecting to mention is that we have these things called outtakes, which if you've been listening to this episode and you wonder, man, why don't they cut more out of this episode? Oh, go listen to the outtakes. You'll see all the stuff we cut out.
Not all, but
I'm trying to post more and more to that. And you can find our outtakes and other bonus content at retrorewindpodcast.com/bonus stage. That's all one word.
But if they're subscribed to the podcast, won't it automatically download?
No, that's
those
a great
episodes.
That's a great question, Paul. No, there are actually two different, essentially, podcasts that you would need to subscribe to. There's our main Retro Rewind podcast, and the RRP Bonus Stage podcast.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Oh. Okay. I'll be sure to subscribe to the other one.
Yes. Sorry, but we won't go into why that is. If you'd like to know, please let us know and we will share it for everyone. But that is all beside the point. I want to say thank you again. And like a Pokemon, we'll catch you later on the next episode of the Retro Rewind podcast.
Ah!
Retro Rewind mission complete. Proceed to Nat Point Omega and return to base.
Proceeding to Map Pointer Maker. We've already had a discussion on the Map Pointer Maker, haven't we? How anyone could
Every
be a Map
time.
Pointer Maker. Oh, okay. Jane and Michael.
You know what? You know what would make all your interrupting go down better, Paul?
A spoonful of sugar?
Exactly.